Hey, good Sunday evening, everybody. Welcome into the Rocky Top Rewind. I am Eric Kane. Happy to have football season once again here. He is Brent Hubbs. You're watching us here on the VolQuest.com YouTube channel. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll be here every Sunday night. Thanks to our friends over at Spivey King and Spivey LLP. If you got a problem, let them find a solution for you. That's TN Trial Lawyers, where they specialize in criminal defense, family law, personal injury. If you have a need for custody of your children, alimony, whatever the case may be, personal injury, contact Exterior Home Solutions today at 865-423-245-4185. That is 423-245-4185 or online at SpiveyKingAndSpiveyLLP.com. So we will be here every Sunday night breaking down the Tennessee game that was, looking ahead to the Tennessee game coming up this weekend. But, man, when the Rocky Top Rewind starts, Brent Hubbs, it means we've officially exited the offseason. We are in game week, and Tennessee football is here.
Absolutely. Welcome to Survival of the Dark period. I hope everybody has had a great summer and glad to have you back with us on the program. And we'll have lots of things going on throughout the season and obviously get you ready tonight. We'll dive into game week. You know, with Chattanooga coming to town, it's a different type of game. But as we know, you know, Eric, that you got to show up every week. And there are things Tennessee has to get done this week and needs to get done on Saturday. And here we go, right? It's time to make that happen. And we'll see where it's at. And I'm gonna flip this on you a little bit. You had no idea I was going to do this to you, so I'm going to flip it on you a little bit.
Can't wait.
You're always the show host for everything. But for you, what's the most in couple of, I wouldn't say the most, but what are the top two or three things you want to see this weekend out of Tennessee? Look, they're going to be, a four-touchdown favorite, probably off the board. It's not even on a Vegas odds board at this point. We've talked so much about each individual. We've broken down this, and we've broken down all of these types of things. When you sit back and say, okay, I would like to come out of Neyland Stadium late Saturday afternoon knowing what? What are the two or three things you want to learn about this team this weekend?
Yeah, I mean, I love to kind of see what's going on in the secondary, and I don't think all of those questions will be answered for sure. I mean, it's going to be Tennessee-Chattanooga. There's going to be a lot of those guys rotating in, but I want to see, obviously, who are the ones that are out there starting. We have a pretty good idea, but what's that snap count look like at the star position? What's that snap count look like at the safety position opposite of Andre Turrentine? I'm really intrigued to see what that looks like and if who has maybe stepped up and maybe created a little separation, taking advantage of those opportunities. So I guess secondary rotation is a good way to phrase it, or lack thereof, is something I'm going to be looking at. The backfield, I think, is a big-time question. Behind Dylan Sampson, who's been a little limited in fall camp, taking a lot of precaution with him. Cam Seldon, he has had that red jersey on the entire camp, and Josh Hoppe a week ago said that he was cleared for contact. What's that mean? Does he get 10 carries? Does he dress out and not play? Does he get one carry? What's Deshaun Bishop look like? I'm intrigued to see the defensive backfield as well. So, and then that wide receiver rotation. Again, against UTC, I think they're going to play a ton. But, you know, Chaz Nimrod, does he play both the slot and the outside? Is it truly going to be Chris Brazo out there or maybe a Dante Thornton? I'm intrigued to kind of see what those wide receivers look like as well. So I'm excited to see football. You're not going to learn, in my opinion, like a ton about Tennessee this game because they should win, as you pointed out, by four or five touchdowns. But just to see the snap counts, to see who goes in what situation, I'm going to be looking forward to that. And obviously I'm going to be looking forward to Tennessee dominating the line of scrimmage because they absolutely should in a game like this.
Yeah, no doubt. For me, I think one thing that when you take it out of personnel, and obviously this is a personnel type game, right? You want to see what young guys look like and all those types of things. To me, I want to see just how clean of a game it is. You know, what do those penalties look like? Where are they from the communication stuff on the sideline, you know, the iPad type things, like how clean and efficient is all of that? Because this is really the one game you got to clean that stuff up, or you come out of this game going, you know what, we ain't gonna fool with all this. Let's bring the dry erase boards back out, you know, and let's go back to where we're comfortable. I think you don't necessarily know the answer to that in game, but I'm curious to see what that looks like in game for how how many tweaks they have to make for it moving forward when you talk about going to Charlotte playing and going to Norman and playing and getting into those SEC games. So that's something outside of personnel, right? Now, there's a lot of individuals I think we all want to see. The transfer, certainly. You know, McCoy, we've heard all about him, but what does he look like? Zach there wants to say, everybody wants to see Boo Carter flying around. I mean, and this is a game about individuals, no doubt about it. So there's a bunch of those to pick from, but I'm kind of curious just to see how efficient they are. They're not going to show, I wouldn't imagine, show a whole lot, but do they show some tempo? How much tempo do they play with? Does that feel cleaner than it did a year ago with a first-year coordinator and Joey Halsley? Does all that seem to be a little more, clean, if you will, or more efficient? So those are some things that I'm kind of curious to see sort of what that looks like. And then the other thing for me, I'm curious to see what kind of game shape some of these offensive players are in. We talked about this a little bit, I think, on the Mailbag podcast.
Yeah.
It was hot. It was super hot in Nashville last year for the Virginia game. But there was a lot of guys in the first quarter on that offense that was looking for some oxygen mask because they were sucking some wind pretty hard. That's natural, I think, in your first game, Eric. I think that's a pretty common thing. But I'm curious just to kind of see where Lance Hurd is and John Campbell and some of these guys who have not gone through a full camp, kind of where they are from a conditioning standpoint.
Yeah, I think there's a big difference in going in and, you know, taking a couple of snaps or a series in practice, 11-on-11 or inside run or whatever, and then going and doing literally a 10-play drive or whatever in a scrimmage. You know, some of these guys didn't scrimmage. Lance Hurd didn't scrimmage the first one. John Campbell missed a little bit of time as well. And you're right. I think the first game of the year, it's natural to feel like you've been punched in the gut and you can't breathe and all that. But couple that with the heat, couple that with this tempo, this offense, and it's magnified a little bit. And there were some guys specifically, you know, Ollie Lane and, you know, Dane at times, and, you know, really all those guys, not, you know, that they were really just out of breath against Virginia a season ago. Let me ask you this. Very much an individual game and all that. You want to take advantage of your opportunities, but can somebody, quote unquote, win a job? I know the season started. Can somebody win a job against in this type of game? Can Jacoby Thomas win that safety job? Can Andre Carrick win that left guard job? Or is it more just like they're probably going to lead the pack the next week?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that you win it and it shuts it down, but I think you can move yourself in the pecking order. You can create some separation where maybe your rotation is not as frequent based on how you played that way. I think there's a little bit of continuing to see that phrase I overuse, above the line and below the line, a little bit, you know, of, okay, man, we feel good. Do you come out of this game and you feel good about three safeties, or do you feel good about four safeties? Do you feel good about three corners or four corners?
Yeah.
Those to me are the types of things you're looking at. Do you feel good about, okay, this guy can handle, you know, being a backup tackle, or no, Dane Davis is literally the sixth guy and he's at all positions to back up? Or is there somebody else that steps up through there? You know, those types of things to me are more curious than you just come out there and say, okay, he's our guy. He's the clear cut absolute guy. I think guys can create some separation and can change the snap counts based on how they play in this first one. So we'll see.
Wes, you see his comment on the screen. He must be an avid Volquester, because I know you've written about this and said this a lot.
He's tired of hearing me talk about it.
But he's right, and you're right. I mean, Tennessee, you look at 2021. Obviously, 2022, Tennessee was so good, but that offense is number one in the country. Took a big-time step back last year. They've got to be better both defensively and offensively in the red zone and getting some things done. If I was good at my job, I would have said that Andy Staples is coming up in 5 minutes, 8:15. Andy Staples is going to join the show. Austin Price coming up around 8:40. Michael wants to know, curious about Brazel's comments on Ricky Gibson being so physical. I'd love to see some tight physical play from the corners. I asked Tim Banks last week, because of the strength of the defensive line, Does that open some things up in the back end to mix some things up, play tight in certain different situations, not as much cushion, not as much zone? He said it depends on the game plan, depends on the opponent, all that type of stuff. But, yeah, I'm with Michael here. I would love to see some tighter coverage and some physicality there, some press man at the line of scrimmage.
Well, and certainly on some third down situations, right? Yeah. Play to the sticks. Don't necessarily worry about playing. You know, I think what is maddening to fans, and we don't understand every coverage that they're in or whatever call is, and there's some guys who obviously take some liberties probably a little bit with the call from a standpoint, okay, they may line up. This is what drives fans crazy, right? It's third and eight. You line up 5 yards off the ball, and when the ball is snapped, you back up 10 more yards. And now you can't close on third and eight. Yep. Whereas if you play a little tighter, you're playing that but more at the sticks. I think that's what a lot of fans would like to see. I think with this defensive front, you should play tighter coverage, you know, at the corner position. That also requires some fearlessness, okay? I think Kamal hadn't played tighter coverage than some of the other corners did. Sounds like McCoy's not very fearless or is real fear. I mean, it doesn't bother him. So I think you could see him play some tighter stuff, and we'll see where Ricky Gibson is. I think you certainly, particularly on third down, would like to see that to be a little tighter, you know, than it's been. So we'll see what that looks like. One thing back to the red zone stuff before we get a break here and get to Andy. There's plenty of things to talk about. Big picture college football, Florida State. You know, a reminder of that you better show up every week. We'll talk to him about, you know, week zero and plenty of other rule changes and everything else going on in college football. But back to the red zone right quick. I'm curious to see how much more diversified their red zone package is this year compared to last year. When you throw in multiple tight ends, you throw in the different types of receivers, and you throw in the legs of Nico and what that could mean in the red zone. I'm curious to see what this red zone package looks like compared to what they were trying to get done in the red zone a year ago.
Yeah, I mean, me too. I think that because of the ability to put more than one tight end on the field at the same time, maybe even more than two when you're, you know, down within the, you know, 10, 15-yard line, Nico's ability to extend plays, but you can call some design run plays in the red zone just like you did against Iowa. You can't make a habit out of it, obviously, but big situations, absolutely. Brew McCoy healthy is a guy that I want, you know, down towards the red zone, throw the football. I think Chris Brazel's a guy, and, you know, some of those tight ends. So I think Tennessee's offense in the red zone specifically is going to be much, much better. I don't know if it'll be as good as 22 because across the board that unit was just so good. But, you know, Hendon Hooker also had the ability to create, you know, with his legs. Look what he's doing with the Detroit Lions right now as well in the preseason. They're seeing that right now. So
yeah, he's had two really – and they were really important weeks for him. His last two games in preseason camp for Hendon Hooker have been great for him and for the Lions, because, you know, there's been all kinds of rumors and where things are with him. And obviously they invested a lot in Jared Goff, and some people thought maybe trade block and that type of thing. Hendon Hooker's put himself that he's much more marketable, much more valuable to the Detroit Lions and much more marketable to the NFL by the way he's played in these last two preseason games. Been fun to watch. Game seems to be slowing. He seems to be knocking off all the rust after missing so much time with that torn ACL.
No doubt about it. We'll get to Andy Staples. He's going to join the show here when we return on the Rocky Top Rewind. But first, I do want to tell you about our friends over at Spivey King and Spivey LLP. They are the presenting sponsor of this show. Matthew A. Spivey, J. Matt Keene, Richard A. Spivey. They're friends. They're Tennessee fans just like us. They're good guys. And if you got a problem, they'll find a solution for you, TN Trial Lawyers. They specialize in criminal defense, family law, and personal injury. Examples of which can be DUI, assault, divorce, custody, alimony, parental rights, personal injuries such as car wrecks, and accidents. Over 80 years of combined experience, Spivey King and Spivey LLP provides representation throughout the state and federal courts of Northeast Tennessee. The firm's got a vast amount of trial experience with over 43 years of this partnership, with this specific trio being here since 2012. The firm has won multiple awards. Their attorneys have been rated by super lawyers in the Mid-South with real trial experience. Whether you've been injured in a car accident, need help with a divorce, help with custody of your children, or been accused of a crime, Spivey King and Spivey LLP is here to help you. Go see him in person at 142 Cherokee Street, Kingsport, Tennessee. Pick up the phone and dial this number for a free consultation. That is 423-245-4185. or you can visit them online at SpiveyKingAndSpiveyLLP.com. That phone number one more time is 423-245-4185. Spivey King and Spivey. You got a problem, let them find a solution for you. TN Trial Lawyer. Hey, welcome back into Rocky Top Rewind, the Rocky Top Rewind presented by Spivey King and Spivey LLP. It's week one. I'm going to get all the verbiage right as we move on, but really, really pleased to be back here, and we'll be here all football season long. I'm Eric Kane alongside Brett Hubbs, and let's bring in one of the biggest personalities here at On Three. That is Andy Staples. Andy, thanks so much for joining us. How was your first college football weekend?
It was unexpected. But it's funny. And Hubs and I have known each other for a long time. Like, Brent, should we not have learned by this point that all this crap we talked about for 9 months means nothing when the games actually start? Like,
it's very
unpredictable.
It is. And Andy, I'll be honest with you. That's what, I mean, I've gotten so many text messages and direct messages and everybody from people today going, how do you feel about that 10-2 Tennessee prediction? I mean, Florida State was talking about how great they were, all their position coaches, all their observers. They're the strongest D-line they've ever had. They've got so much depth here. All these things, talking it up big time, and then they go and obviously do not play well at all in Dublin. And you're right. I mean, no coach is going to talk about how bad their team is, right, with the exception of a couple, Spurrier being one. But most coaches don't step to the podium and go, we're not any good. You know, they talk about how good they are, and it creates crazy expectations. And they were certainly there at Florida State, and that was not what any Florida State fan anticipated. And it's a reminder that it's talking season and playing season are 180 degree opposite of each other, Andy.
Yeah, and it's amazing because with this 12-team playoff starting, there are so many fan bases that seem really confident that their team's going to make this first 12-team bracket. And they ain't all going to make it because there's more than 12 fan bases that have that irrational level of confidence. I don't get that sense from the Tennessee bunch because I think they would like to make it. They think there's a good chance Tennessee's going to make it. But they also understand that Nico's his first year as a starter. You don't exactly know how things are going to go. The schedule's
really
still pretty tough.
That's really kind of you
say, Andy. Yeah. Well, but the thing about it is I get from the fans that communicate with me, I get more of a what do you mean we're not going to make the playoff vibe from Missouri fans, from LSU fans, from Oklahoma fans. Like, how dare you even insinuate that we might not be in this bracket? And, you know, a couple of those may make it, but a couple of them might not. Or all of them might not. Like, we don't know. And I think that's the thing that Florida State game should show you, that no matter how good you think you are, we don't know it until we see it. Because Georgia Tech whipped Florida State up front, whipped them on both lines of scrimmage. And, you know, this was supposed to be the best Florida State offensive line in a long time. And I think part of it was because Florida State didn't really take a lot of deep shots early. Doesn't seem like they're super confident in DJ throwing downfield, but the offensive line and the blocking in general, I don't want to blame the offensive linemen completely because sometimes they were sending more than five, but they didn't look that great. They weren't resetting the line of scrimmage in the run game like we thought they would. And the D-line, like Georgia Tech's offensive line, was great against that Florida State D-line. So I just think everybody calm down and get ready because – like, this week's going to be wild, guys. I think about this. There's more FBS versus FCS this week than we've ever seen in a week one. Like, if you look at the schedule, you're like, oh, we've got these big games, Florida-Miami, LSU-USC, Texas A&M, Notre Dame. But, like, there's one in each window, and then everything else is what we think is a mismatch.
Right.
There's going to be some weird, weird results this weekend. There'd be some upsets where we're like, what the hell just happened?
Well, I want to say this too, and I give Brent Key a ton of credit at Georgia Tech because I think he inherited a pretty rough situation.
Mm-hmm.
It looked like they weren't going to give him that job. They tried to go hire – felt like they were trying to go –
they were going
to
hire Willie Fritz.
Right. Instead of hiring him, he's done a really nice job there of creating a brand and an identity for that program. And anytime Georgia Tech's ever been any good, Andy, they've had an identity. Mm-hmm. And I'll give him credit. They're tough. they're in the ACC, which is not maybe the most physical great conference, but there's a lot of people out there paying attention to what Brent Key has done. He's done a heck of a job. I don't want to – Florida State's shortcomings should not take away from what Brent Key has gotten done at Georgia Tech. Good football
and it's,
coach.
It's interesting with Georgia Tech, Hubbard, because they've got the toughest schedule in the toughest conference schedule in the ACC. Like, of all the – we've talked about it a lot in the SEC, like who got the good draws and who got the bad draws. Miami got the good draw in the ACC. Georgia Tech got the bad draw. And Georgia Tech has to play Notre Dame and Georgia out of conference. So they have the toughest schedule by far of anybody in the ACC. So we don't know how they're going to get through it. But I tell you what, if you can – because, look, we do know that Florida State's defensive linemen are talented. We have seen them play well before. To do that against them, you have to be pretty good. That suggests they can do that against these other teams on their schedule. So who knows? I mean – like, we may be really underestimating Georgia Tech in terms of their long-term potential this season.
Yeah, their schedule, looking at it, it's pretty back-loaded heavy.
It's tough.
The back half of their schedule is pretty tough. They can make some noise and get some attention early. I want to ask you this, Andy. With you're talking about these games, and there's just a sprinkling of the marquee matchups, if you will. With the advent of the playoff, with the reduction in scholarship numbers and bodies that are coming, and what I think will continue to soften preseason camps, are coaches going to tell their ADs, let's start staying out of the early season bye game, the neutral site, Jerry's World, marquee matchups, or do they still want to play those in week one knowing, hey, we can lose a couple of ball games and still make the playoffs?
I think it's going to depend on the coach. Like, if you look at what Georgia has done, and all of this has been at the direction of Kirby Smart, because all of this scheduling has happened since Kirby Smart became the head coach. Like, Georgia was clearly telegraphing that they thought there was going to be a bigger playoff even before we knew it was going to be a 12-team playoff, and that Kirby was going to do the Tom Izzo thing. Like, let's go play some people. Let's, you know, challenge ourselves if we can. And that helps us when we get to December. And I think last season actually is a good example of why they have that attitude. Remember, they're supposed to play Oklahoma. That game gets taken off the schedule because Oklahoma's joining the SEC. And they ended up with a really soft start to the schedule. And they didn't round into form for a while. Like, it took them a while to get going.
Right.
And I think having that really good game. Now, it doesn't necessarily have to be a neutral site game. Like, you could be doing what Florida and Miami are doing, where you're playing home and home situation. But having that game there pushes you all off season because you know what's waiting for you at the beginning of the season. And I think, so your LSU-USC type game, I think a lot of coaches want a game like that just to provide 9 months of motivation.
Andy, this kind of leads me into my next question, this question here from Nolan about Tennessee's schedule. Which one's more likely to lose, Bama at home or Oklahoma on the road? The two huge games for Tennessee this season, that along with NC State's and, of course, Georgia on the road, Florida's at home. Probably those games I just mentioned. What does Tennessee need to do over that road map in order to secure a spot in that college football playoff?
I think if they can beat NC State and split Alabama and Oklahoma, I think they're in good shape. Now, they obviously still have to beat – they have to beat Florida. They have to beat the teams that we're thinking they're supposed to beat. But more than likely, if you split Bama and OU, if you beat NC State, you can get away with losing to Georgia, which until I see Tennessee beat Georgia, I'm not there yet, because I think it, in the Styles Make Fights deal – Tennessee style, it's a bad matchup, like with Georgia. So I think you got to split those. I think going to OU for their first SEC home game is going to be very tough. But also, I think Alabama's – I'm higher on Alabama than most people are. I think Alabama could win the SEC this year. But I actually think at Tennessee is one of their tougher games. And I think, you know, we'll see. It's a new defense. It's not that same defense that Alabama brought to Neyland Stadium 2 years ago. It'll be Kane Womack's defense now. So We don't know exactly how it's going to match up, but, you know, they did lose maybe the best safety in the country in Caleb Downs to Ohio State in the transfer portal. They did a good job replacing. They still have a lot of talent on that team, but you did see how Tennessee could take advantage of some mismatches and create some mismatches against Alabama a couple of years ago. It can be done again as long as Nico is what we think he is. And, you know, I've said this a bunch. I said this to Brent and Austin when I was up in Knoxville last time in the spring. I think Nico is a lot closer to Hendon Hooker than Joe Milton was. And his ceiling may be higher than Hendon Hooker's. I think that's the hope at Tennessee, is that Nico's ceiling is higher than Hendon Hooker's. But even if you just get Hendon Hooker again, like that level of quarterback, that puts you in the playoff.
Yeah.
That would put Tennessee in the playoff. And I think Nico's ability to improvise, Nico's ability to understand the read option mesh, which opens up a whole new world of read option type plays, of quarterback run game, of RPO stuff, if you want to do that, reopens the middle of the field for the Tennessee offense. I think they're going to be pretty good. But they do, like, you can't drop both those games, because I think if you drop both those, that makes Georgia a must win. And that, like, going to Athens needing to beat Georgia is a pretty tough place to live.
Andy, let me ask you this big picture. Who do you think it's a harder transition for Oklahoma and Texas coming into the SEC, or those Pac-12 teams going into the Big Ten?
I think Oklahoma and Texas will find it tougher week to week. I think the Big Ten is not as deep as the SEC past the top. Like, they're both very top heavy. The teams at the top of both leagues are great. But I think the problem in the SEC, what makes it a little tougher, is that middle, you know, where your teams 7 through 11 are going to give you a game, even if you are one of the best teams. Like, you could be conceivably the second or third best team in the SEC. You go play team number 10. If you're beat up, if it's the wrong week, if their QB has a great day, like, you could lose. And I don't think team number 10 in the Big Ten scares you nearly as much.
Andy, Donovan's got a couple of questions he wants to ask you. One, when does Napier get fired? Are you of the belief that Napier will not survive this season? And if he is to survive, what's that record need to be?
They got to make a bowl game at the very least. Like, below 500, at that point, you've shown everybody what you are. You are an under 500 coach, because he would be under 500 every single year there. And you just can't – that's not acceptable at Florida. You know, people can say you got to give him time. They haven't given anybody else time. It doesn't matter. Like, once somebody's three under 500 seasons, that's who they are. That's what most of their seasons are going to look like. So you would have to do something then. Now, I will say, if you go 7-5 against this schedule and the five aren't embarrassing – like, you're actually in, because think about it, if you go 7-5 and then you're in some of the games you lost, it means you're being competitive with teams that probably made the playoff, which means you're not very far away. So I think that's probably where the threshold is. Like, 6-6, like, what are the six? What do they look like? 7-5, I think you're feeling like the trajectory is where it needs to be going. Anything below that, you know, anything under 500, I think you're just looking at it and going, okay, it's year three. You were supposed to make them better, and I don't care how difficult the schedule was. Like, they're not better.
Georgia or the field?
I'm still taking Georgia. Though I think, again, like I said, I think I'm higher in Alabama than most people. The problem with Georgia, like, Georgia could not win the SEC but win the national title. I think there's a definite possibility. And, well, obviously we saw that a few years ago, mm-hmm, when they lost to Alabama in the SEC title game and then beat them in Indianapolis. But they are deep. They are probably still, you know, them and Ohio State are probably the two most talented teams in America. But they play their toughest three games on the road. Like, they did not get an easy draw from the SEC. You got to go to Tuscaloosa, to Oxford, and to Austin. Like, they could go 10-2. And then if they did, they're probably sitting there as, like, the 7 seed or the 8 seed, and people are just dreading seeing them in the playoffs.
But I heard Kirby say they had no depth. They had real depth issues.
Well, they do have depth issues compared to what they used to be. Kirby's pining for.
Every team wants those Kirby, depth issues than their own.
It's like,
right?
I figured it out with the old system. Like, I was the best at the old system, and you changed it all on me.
I had this great plan, and now you've messed this plan up.
Last thing from Donovan here. Do you think Texas makes the playoffs? Donovan believes they go 8-4. Oklahoma goes 5-7. The grind of the SEC.
Guys, they're not going to stink. Like, they're not going to both stink. The mighty SEC is not that mighty. I just got done saying it's deep. But here's the thing. Texas's roster is great. It's really good. They absolutely should be a playoff contender. They absolutely should be contending for an SEC title. Whether they do or not depends on, do they pull the Texas thing? Which, by the way, I think last season they kind of got out of that. Remember, they had that thing where they would just lose these games that they have no business losing. Like a few years ago, the Texas Tech game made no sense. None whatsoever. Or those games to Kansas that they lost. Like, that's the thing that they overcame last year. And if that's something that they've overcome permanently, then I don't think they have anything to worry about. They'll be competitive. Oklahoma's the one, like, get Oklahoma now, where they're dealing with a rebuilt offensive line. I still think they're going to be pretty good. I think Jackson Arnold's ceiling is really high. You talk to coaches about that class of 2023. He's the quarterback they all wanted. Oklahoma's always good. Like, look at Oklahoma's history. It's basically they were down in the mid to late 90s, and that's it. Otherwise, they're always good. So anybody who thinks Oklahoma's coming to the SEC to fall flat on its face, they don't know their college football history. Like, Oklahoma will be just fine. This is a bad year for them to have to make this switch just because they lost Tyler Guyton, a first-round offensive tackle, and Walter Rouse, who's, I believe, also going to wind up starting in the NFL this year. But it doesn't mean that this is a permanent deal. Like, they are going to be good in the SEC for the time that they're there.
All right, Andy, weekend one coming up here. What is your – give me your top storyline, your top two storylines going in. What are we talking about on Sunday after we – or I guess technically Tuesday after we get through the holiday weekend? What are we talking
if
about?
If Florida State somehow manages to be 0-2 in the ACC after week one, that would be the dominant story. But, you know, I think they'll bounce back against Boston College on Monday night. No, I think the two games that are the biggest overreaction games, because we'll have massively boiling hot takes – coming out of both of these games, and neither one of them might actually tell us a whole lot. So Florida-Miami and USC-LSU. So Florida-Miami, we don't know what these teams are. We think Miami's roster is really good based on these transfer portal rankings. We think that they've really improved. But Mario Cristobal, in his 2 years there, they've not really shown the improvement on the field that we thought he was going to bring. We got to see that. But if they go in the swamp, let's say you go to the swamp, it's really loud. You know, Tennessee fans don't know anything about that. They don't know anything about going to the swamp with a more talented team and losing. But I digress. Let's say they go lose by two.
By the way, thanks. This is a preview weekend. We're all excited.
I know. I'm sorry. I had to go there.
You just gutted everybody to start the game.
I think they're fine. They understand.
It was great to have you on the show this year. We'll talk now.
Never bring him back. No, but let's say Miami loses by two. Like, their fan base is going to be like, oh, my God, you lost by two to the Florida team that's only supposed to win four games. Like, fire everyone. But that Miami team could then go win its next 11 and win the ACC and make the playoff. Same thing for Florida. Like, let's say they lose to Miami by two. Oh, God, fire Billy now. It's all over. If they can't beat these guys, how are they going to handle the rest of the schedule? Well, what if Miami's really good? We don't even know that. And then the same deal out in Vegas with USC and LSU. Like, both of their defenses stunk last year. Both of them are replacing Heisman Trophy winning quarterbacks. Like, what if it's a little bit lower scoring game and we're like, they fixed the defenses? And then they go play other teams and it's like, oh no, they didn't fix the defense. Like, we don't know yet.
What happens if Georgia manhandles Clemson? What does that look like in the Dabo world?
The Take Factory is going to be working overtime.
Oh, yeah.
If Georgia manhandles Clemson, because we're I'll be one of them doing it. Like, you can't win these days without taking transfers. I mean, but it's true. The thing about the Georgia Clemson game is Clemson fancies itself on the same level as Georgia and was on that level because they were winning national titles. So they are measuring themselves against Georgia, and if they go get beat by 3-4 touchdowns, oh man. Like, you've got to reevaluate at that point. Because it really doesn't matter what happens in the ACC, because you know what's going to happen if you make the playoff. You've already got a preview of that.
It's happening, Andy. It's 100% happening. 3-4.
Vegas thinks so too, Austin. I think that's the one I feel like people are most confident in is that Georgia will win by a lot in that game.
The problem with Dabo's kind of, you know, odd way of thinking about the transfers, and like, he's right to a degree. Like, you're getting someone else's problems. You don't meet in some ways, but in some ways, you know, like Tennessee's taking Chris Brazel from Tulane. Like, that kid, you know, mm-hmm. boom, right? Like, it played, if you're taking somebody from another major Power Five, there's a reason they weren't on the field at that Power Five in more than one instance. And, like, you know, maybe not Brock Vandergrift. He just was buried on the depth chart. But, like, in some right. ways, in other positions, if you have a coach that doesn't recruit real well, and they don't recruit real well in the offensive line.
Or a receiver of late. Now, they like right. the two freshmen, Wesco and Moore, right now. But, yeah same deal.
You don't have time to wait around on freshmen to develop when you actually do get a few in, especially at an offensive line position that is – normally a developmental position, right? Like, if yep. you don't see many places throwing out, you know, three true freshmen. You can throw three true freshman receivers out and probably be okay. You throw three true freshman offensive linemen out and it's going to be hard to go. And I think
I'll give you the reasoning for Dabo's argument about it, and it makes some sense. And I do wonder if next year when the schools can kick in money that it changes things. Max in the chat talking about Lance Hurd. I'm glad you mentioned that, because that's who I was going to bring up. So when Dabo was talking about transfers, he was saying there's three types. There's ones that aren't good enough to play at Clemson. Very true. So eliminate those off the top. There's the guys that already know where they're going when they hit the portal. That's also true. Now, everyone tampers. You should be tampering too, is the argument there. But the other thing is the guys who haven't decided and who are good enough to help Clemson win, Clemson can't afford. Like, they've dedicated most of their NIL money to retaining their best players, which is the smart thing to do, and to signing good freshmen, which is another smart thing to do. And they just don't have the war chest that a Tennessee has, that a Texas has, that an Oregon has. And because of that, they wouldn't be able to get on a Lance Hurd if they wanted to, which they probably would have wanted to, but I don't think they would have been able to afford him.
Yeah, I think it's a fascinating deal, and I think he's stuck at the quarterback position with somebody who is just not developed. I mean, we saw DJ for Florida State look like what DJ's always look like. Everybody's been, you know, leery of turning him loose for whatever reason, wherever he's been, and Klubnik's just not taking any kind of step. Now, maybe that's offensive line's fault. Maybe it's a lack of playmakers. I'm not sure, but he's made, you know, he hasn't played very well. And the bottom line with it is this.
And Chris Vezina isn't probably jumping in to take that position. I wrote about this the other day, Brent. You know, they had, like, Deshaun Watson didn't start as a true freshman only out of abundance of caution. They didn't start him until game 5. He should have started game 4 against Florida State. Had he started game 4, they would have won the ACC that year. Trevor Lawrence, they had a weird situation. Kelly Bryant had gone 13-1 as the starter the year before. And how do you replace him with a true freshman? But then it was clear that Trevor was the better player. And so they make the switch and they let Kelly do the 4-game redshirt and dip out and go play at Missouri the next year. Chris Vezina did not put that pressure on Cade Klubnik. Like, it going from Deshaun Watson, Trevor Lawrence right in a row to DJU, Cade Klubnik, it's a totally different world. And that's what I get into this chicken and egg argument with myself about. Well, they haven't really developed any receivers. Like T. Higgins was the last truly great receiver they had. But, oh, yeah, T. Higgins got to play with Trevor Lawrence. Like, who have these guys gotten to play with?
Well, and again,
Amari Rodgers are pretty good, too.
Yeah, you had Amari Rodgers. I mean, that's right. Weapons. I mean, Trevor Lawrence had weapons to throw, too. But Trevor Lawrence made those weapons better because he could throw the ball. I think it goes back to what we're talking about. The teams that are going to make the playoffs, they're going to have to stay healthy, right? They're going to have some good fortune. And nobody's winning if you have average quarterback play, right? Who's winning with average quarterback play in college?
Well, Ohio State, like Will Howard, I don't think has to be Superman, and they can win because they're going to be really hard to score on, and they've got weapons all over the field.
But can he
so get Jeremiah Smith, Emeka Abuka, and Carnell Tate are going to make the quarterback look better.
But to Hubs' point, though, the rule is you're going to have a really good quarterback play.
Here's the thing, too. It doesn't have to be the most talented quarterback. He doesn't have to be elite with an arm. He doesn't have to.
Right.
You have to get good quarterback play. Will Howard can't have a day against somebody of note where he throws three interceptions
because
just plays poorly. You just can't.
We saw a good example of that yesterday, Brent, I think with Haynes King. So Haynes King didn't put up monster numbers yesterday. But he threw zero interceptions, which was a huge problem for him last year. I believe he threw 19 interceptions. He had an obscene number of interceptions last year. He threw zero against Florida State. And while he didn't make any spectacular down-the-field throws, he made some incredible third down, I'm about to get sacked, they're blitzing the hell out of me, but I know I've got a safety valve here, so I'm going to dump it off to him for a first down. He made two or three of those in the fourth quarter alone. And so you're right. Good quarterback play is absolutely necessary.
Andy, again, I was on the tail end of this thing. You may have talked about NIL. I don't know. Where's your take on some of this? There's a thread on the general scores. It's a thread on a message board. Let's go ahead and preface this saying that, you know, Arkansas hadn't met payroll. They, you know, kids had kind of set out of practice or whatever. Who knows if that is true? But don't you think that that's eventually going to come one way or the other? Just because, like, these donors are getting tired of funding this operation across college football. And we're not talking about, you know, $50,000 to $200,000, you know, like the old days where you'd go and get a five-star for, you know, $100,000. And
right. The price has gone up now that it's over the table.
Millions and millions and millions of dollars. And it's not like donating to give to a building one time either. So, I mean, don't you think that if let's say that is true. I don't think it is, but let's say it is. Like, don't you think that that's going to happen frequently around college football because donors are going to get tired of funding things?
Yeah, and they're going to have to be careful. Now, if this house settlement goes through, which is still an if, let's say it does.
And there may be two dozen lawsuits to come out of the settlement, by the way.
Correct. But let's say that the system does start. And look, they don't have to settle this thing to start allowing schools to pay the players. They can just choose to do that if they want to. That will take the pressure off the donors on the front end. Now, they're still going to be like, because everybody's looking at this, because one, you can't unilaterally impose a salary cap. So they can say all they want that the schools are allowed to give this much. Collectives will kick in more. And so you're still going to have schools having to hit up donors to donate to the collective, and they're not going to want to do it. Like, you guys are right. They are tired of it. And I was talking to somebody who'd been working with a collective at an SEC school the other day, and they told me that the thought is, you know, you have your $22 million that the school can give, and obviously most of that is going to go to football. And then maybe another 10 or 20% comes from the collective. You can't, and this person's just like, you can't ask these people for more than that because you've already asked them for so much. And you're still asking them for money to build the buildings and to fund the general athletic department fund that will also help pay the players now. So, like, you can't keep double charging them. Like, Oklahoma State putting the QR code on the helmet to donate to the general NIL fund. It's like tipping your barista at Starbucks for scoring a touchdown. Like, it just doesn't make any sense. Like, that's not how you fund this. You fund it with TV money, with the money you get selling tickets. Like, you fund it with the big money.
Andy, thanks so much for joining us, man. I hope you didn't have an 8:30 or an 8:45 because we have kept you on so long.
But see, this is, when I bring Brent and Austin on my show, I always keep them way too long. So it turnabout is very much fair play.
Well, by the way, plug to everybody who are on here tonight, where they could find you, when they can find you. You do not just the morning time. You got some instant reaction type.
Yeah,
stuff.
we don't mess around once the season starts. So
and you're right. I'm telling you on what to do here.
We are moving to our in-season schedule, and so we're on in the mornings on the On3 Sports YouTube channel live, and you come in, you can mess with me in the chat and all that good stuff, but that's on demand anytime all day if you want it, and it's also in podcast form. As soon as we finish the live show, we publish it to all the podcast platforms, whether you're an Apple Podcast, Spotify, you know, whatever you prefer to get your podcasts on, you can get it that way, and then you don't have to look at me. But also, after big games, when crazy results happen, when crazy news breaks, we go straight live. We just hit the button and go, because I find that that's the most fun. That's when the chat is the liveliest. After that Georgia Tech Florida State game, the chat was on fire. It was incredible. Everybody who doubted Florida State all offseason showed up to remind us that they had told us this was going to happen.
As they should.
So plenty of ways to find you. Obviously, yep, a great follow on Twitter, because you announce when you're going live on social media as well. So I encourage everybody, if you're interested in big picture topics in college athletics, such as the NIL conversation we just had, topics specific to games coming up or games that have just happened.
Important Tennessee related topics, like, yeah, should Elijah Simmons sing to opposing centers? Will that create a distraction enough to make them snap the ball wrong? I think it'll work. Cooper Mays agrees with me. He thinks it'll work. The man has a beautiful voice.
Yes, he absolutely does. Andy, we appreciate you, my man. We'll talk to you
soon, guys.
Buddy.
Thanks so much, Andy.
All right, that is Andy Staples of On3 joining us here on the Rocky Top Reader. I'm telling you, this show's a blast to watch. I mean, it's to watch, listen to. I mean, it's fun to do if you're a college football fan beyond just your specific team. It's a great show to follow, and you can watch it on demand anytime. So we appreciate Andy going a little overtime with us today, Eric Kane.
Yeah, he was great. I mean, obviously he wasn't in a hurry, but I looked down at my clock and I'm like, I told him 10 minutes. Like, I was like, golly. Now, he was awesome, though. Really, really do appreciate him joining us.
And he has the balls in the playoff.
Yeah, he has the balls in the playoffs. So does a couple other On3 personalities,
right,
as well.
I know we got a trendy pick. I know we got to get a break, but we have two things here. One, a tournament bracket wants to know how much you'll sell him your pullover for, and Eric, and Sam Smith has asked, I think, three times now, what does your coffee mug say?
It says, don't make me use my radio voice.
There you go. All right.
There we go.
Pressing questions. We get those answers for you. Right,
we're going to be here to answer for you. We're not going to take a break. We're going to power through.
Okay,
here. We got Austin Price on. I've been starring a bunch of questions throughout the show, so I want to go back and revisit them. We'll go here. Haven't heard much about Squirrel White. Can you recap his summer camp? Austin, Squirrel's been fine. Squirrel's going to be the starting receiver in the slot. Maybe not going to play as many snaps as last year because there's more depth, but expect a lot of production from him.
And that's the big theme, right? If you talk to any of the receivers, if you talk to Brew McCoy off to the side, he'll tell you that that 22 season was taxing. They played so many reps. And so, you know, I think that the receivers welcome the fact that they may play a bigger rotation in 2024. As Squirrel White will start, you'll see Chaz Nimrod in the slot. And then we'll see who else, you know, factors in there behind those first two. But, you know, Squirrel is poised to have a big year. He switched to the number three. So if you're going to the stadium or you're watching on TV Saturday, remember, Squirrel's no longer number 10. He's number three. And so that's who you'll see in the slot for the Vols early on.
And Brew is number 5, and Mike Matthews is number 10. There's a bunch of those guys that change numbers. Matthew, does the Oklahoma game come down to our defensive line? With Oklahoma having a young and new offensive line, is that matchup not many people are talking about? Brent, I think that's absolutely a huge point of emphasis in a matchup in this game that everybody's got to watch. Tennessee's 23-year-old experienced offensive or defensive line that also has James Pierce, the best pass rusher in the country, or one of them, against a new-look starting five with a young quarterback. That game's at home, so that helps them, but I do think that's a huge factor in that football game that would be an advantage for Tennessee.
Yeah, I mean, I think outside of all the talk about Josh Heupel going home, that's when you dive into the matchup of that game, that's the one everybody's going to circle back to, right, Austin? I mean, lots of people are going to talk about the quarterback, young quarterback versus young quarterback, but then you're going to add to that young quarterback at Oklahoma with a young offensive line against a very veteran defensive line that Tennessee has. I think that's going to be a big storyline in that game when you talk about the matchup part of it outside of Josh Heupel's going home.
Yeah, 1,000%. Jackson Arnold in the one start a year ago was turnover prone. Through fall, early in fall camp, the indication was he was still turning the ball over. He's uber talented. But, you know, if you can get to him, flush him, get him flustered, make him, you know, put him in spots where he makes bad decisions, then, you know, that sets your defense up for success. And so, yeah, I do think the defensive line against what is a very inexperienced, weaker offensive line is the matchup of the game for Tennessee. They've got to exploit that. They've got to, you know, get to him early and often.
What three wide receivers emerge as the starters? Do we rotate more at this position than we did last year, not just out of necessity? Brent, I do think Tennessee's going to rotate a receiver. I think the three starters out there, snap one, will be Brew McCoy, Skrull White, Chris Brazel. I see Chaz Nimrod, Dante Thornton in that rotation, and then probably Caleb Webb, so making that six. Mike Matthews probably, but he missed a little bit of fall camp. Maybe he's playing catch-up, but I see those five, and then probably Caleb Webb is the sixth right now. Would you agree?
Well, I think for this week it doesn't matter. I think that's one of those positions we were talking about earlier in the show. Can somebody go win a job? I don't know that you're winning a job this week, but I think you can come out of this week, Austin, with a little better clarity on what rep numbers look like with that depth, right? Like, where does everybody kind of shuffle in after your first three? And do you want to go six deep? Do you want to go eight deep? I think those are the types of things that you're looking at coming out of this week. If I'm a young receiver, obviously you want to play well, but you better play clean. Don't have dumb mistakes. Don't run wrong routes. You know, don't make the mental errors in this game. You want to be clean to keep yourself in that position to make that rotation as deep as you want it. Because look, they don't have any problem shortening it. They don't want to shorten that rotation, but if they feel like they need to, they've shown in the past, it doesn't bother them to shorten it up to get the most consistent play out of that group.
Yeah, 1,000%. Jenny Johnson is down here asked about the depth chart coming out tomorrow. And you'll see, Michael Orr played for the Vols, but Orr will play on the depth chart tomorrow. And which goes back to talking about receivers, Hubbard, is you're going to see Orr at a lot of spots there. I mean, you're going to see Orr across the board in a lot of different spots outside of maybe quarterback and a couple other spots.
Let me ask you this. If there's an Orr, what position group could we see an Orr tomorrow that is just ridiculous? There should not be an Orr. Like, will Nico have an Orr?
No, he will not have an Orr. He will not have an Orr.
Will Lance Hurd have an Orr?
Maybe, I don't think so.
I don't think so, but – I think you're going to have a bunch of Orrs across the board there. And I mean, and I get it because they're so deep there, but I think the entire defensive line is going to be Orr.
Yeah.
One through the top four. I mean, I think it's going to be Orr, and Orr.
Which makes sense. Yeah.
You know, and I think in the secondary, I think the two safety positions are definitely going to be just a bunch of Orrs. So I think you're going to see a bunch of them. And again, I think there's a couple of reasons why that happens. I think, one, coaches don't even want a depth chart out there, so it doesn't matter to them. Two, Austin, I think in this day and age where you're talking about, you know, people getting in their fields and the transfer portal and all those things, you don't want anybody starting off a season thinking, well, they've just cast me off. So the easy answer is just to put an Orr besides everybody's name, or don't do a depth chart. And more and more schools are not handing out a depth chart, right?
Yeah. If I was Tennessee, I would. I mean, I don't think nothing positive comes out of it. I know a couple old fans like that, just like they like their program, just like they like their football time in Tennessee Magazine, or their trip to Arby's would pass out the little handout.
Arby's kickoff, man.
Yeah, the little kickoff. I mean, like the old school fans love that, but college coaches don't. They hate it. Like, I mean, they're going to begrudgingly potentially do this, you know, injury thing, and they're going to hate that too. Like, it's lots of change, and the change is not stopping anytime soon.
Also, like, I mean, I'm not trying to be like rude here, but like Kamal Haddon was on the depth chart for like 3 weeks after his injury. I mean, like it's inaccurate. So like,
you pay no attention to what comes out tomorrow. It's
exactly.
Yeah. I mean, that's again, what's the point in them? I mean, I know there's a feeling that you got to do one. A lot of schools are still doing them, so I get it, but they're going to play a whole bunch of people, in the first week, and then we'll see, regardless of what the depth chart looks like, we'll see what the rotation of those positions look like when you get into crunch time. Every coach has talked about playing a bunch of bodies, and it sounds terrific. The question I have is, will they do it in a big time game, right? When every possession matters. Are you going to rotate as freely as you did? I mean, Florida State fans are mad right now because they rotated too freely on their offensive line, in their opinion. They played like nine offensive linemen in that game because they think they had so much depth and it looked like they had no continuity there. So what do you do when you get into those big time games? How much are you rotating? That's when you find out if you're really rotating a bunch of guys.
Hey, kind of on that note, AP, Lampley and Carrick expected to rotate with the first team at left guard week one. And it wouldn't shock me if Dane Davis rotates in there with the first team. I expect those two guys to play with the first team a little bit in a game like this, whereas before they take everybody out and put the second team in. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think you better get Sham Umarov some work in there too. Like, I think that, you know, this is a perfect game to get him some work, you know, because you just never know when you're going to need it. A year ago, when you got to the bowl game, it was a makeshift offensive line. It's a long season. I think you want to get, you know, in games like this, all those players, Sham on the defensive side, John Slaughter or whoever, you know, Jordan Matthews, they need as much experience as they can get.
Well, yeah, to your point, Eric, I think they go into this game with a plan of saying Andre Carrick and Lampley are going to rotate with the first team until the first team is, quote, out of the game. And then, you know, you play a bunch of other guys there. I don't know if they will rotate a left guard every series, the first four series, to get all four guys some, you know, some snaps there. I think they want to get all those guys reps, but I think the two that they may split first team reps with are Carrick and Lampley. That's what I feel like going into week one, and we'll see if that's how it plays out.
And then again, moving on to NC State, you hope that one of those guys, you know, plays the 80%, the 20%, and then you have a starter. Yeah. Last one, I had this question up here forever, but we never got to it. But out the door, Princeton Fant 2024, is there a guy that's got that skill set, or do we just not know yet? Remember, we didn't know Princeton Fant's skill set until Alabama of 2022. That was midway through the year.
Yeah, I would disagree with that. I mean, I think we all knew Princeton Fant's skill set because he played six different positions.
Well, no, okay, let me rephrase that. We didn't know what that he was going to have that role the last five games.
Yeah, I mean, I can get behind that. Yeah. But we all knew that he was capable of taking a handoff. We all knew that he was capable of, you know, doing what he did at tight end. I don't think there's anybody like that because nobody is, you know, I don't think any of the running backs are sliding over to, you know, be kind of pseudo tight ends, and I don't think any of the tight ends are taking handoffs. So I think that was just a specialty deal that, you know, they kind of stumbled in 22, and I'm not sure you'll find the same type thing anytime soon.
I would agree with that. He's just a different type player.
Brent asked me this earlier on the show, Austin, but this is the last thing here on the Rocky Top Rewind. What will you be looking for in game one? It's a big time individual game. Let's see what this guy does, this guy does, this guy does. But what are you going to be paying attention to week one against Chattanooga?
Come out, play clean, and get in and get out, get your business done. Like, you know, that's what veteran teams, and in a lot of ways, Tennessee is a veteran team. maybe not at quarterback, but they're a veteran team in a lot of other spots. So if I'm watching for Tennessee to come in, put up a bunch of points, get in, get out, stay healthy, and move on to Charlotte against NC State.
Big thanks to Andy Staples for joining the show with us for about 30 minutes. Great conversation. And if you caught half of the show, we'll have it up on the website, up on the YouTube channel. You can watch on demand. We'll put it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify as well. I appreciate all the questions. There's a lot of questions we didn't get to, but we'll try to answer those as we move on throughout the season. Every single Sunday night during football season, excluding the off weeks, right here, 8 to 9 o'clock Eastern time on the VolQuest YouTube channel. It's the Rocky Top Rewind, presented by our friends over at Spivey King and Spivey LLP. If you got a problem, let them find a solution for you, T&T Lawyers. Whether you're in a car accident, need a divorce, help with custody of your children, or have been accused of a crime, Spivey King and Spivey LLP is here to help you. 423-245-4185 for a free consultation, or at SpiveyKingAndSpiveyLLP.com. For Austin Price, Brent Hubbs, I am Eric Kane. Thanks so much for joining us here on the first edition of the 2024 Rocky Top Rewind.